Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine. It's episode 79. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason. How are you doing?
Doing good. Welcome back. I took a little trip, but it was wedged in between the simultaneous Fridays, so I didn't miss an episode. I like
you
that.
You did not, actually.
No, I got a text from David Lohr at one point who said, I can fill in for you. And I said, no, I'll be back. It's fine. He was like, I'm warming up. I'm like, nope, I'll be back.
Yeah, he was out in the bullpen.
He was ready. He was, uh-huh. The manager did not ask him to warm up, but he was warming up in the bullpen anyway.
Yeah. Instead of the manager walking out pointing to a right arm or a left arm, Lohr had both arms up.
He was tapping on the microphone.
He was like, I'm right here. I can save this game.
Me.
And you probably could have saved a lot of stuff. God knows.
Alas. Mm-hmm. Well, one of these days I'll need to fill in, but it wasn't today. So, how about you? It looks like you had a busy week. I see four new stories since we last talked, four new reviews.
Yeah, maybe I should have had a fill in.
Maybe so.
That's clear. Because what the people don't know, and you're being kind, not even making fun of me, I took a gigantic nap before this.
Well, I don't know what the size of the nap. It was definitely a nap. I don't know. You didn't email me too long ago, and it was one of those, can I take a nap now?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, go ahead, take a nap. It was not that long a nap, but now you're refreshed.
It was a little bit like close to 2 hours, but yeah.
Okay. Well, now you're ready to go. You're raring to go.
I am ready to go.
You're energized.
It's been one of those things where the watching – and that's the thing. This is what – you know, this was what TV critics talk about sometimes when they talk about TV, when they're not talking about podcast. And that is, it's the extra hours. You know, we go and you're just like, you know what? I'll watch another episode of that. And they add up. So I strung together a lot of, I think, more hours than I have strung together reviews of late. And so that part of the job is definitely switched. I will pass on... just sort of in that vein that when Dan and I had a little back and forth with one of our critics' notebooks, he was saying, oh, I watch everything. He recently broke that, which made me laugh out loud. And he talked about, he had to reference it in public because I think he was, you know, feeling that he was on record as saying, oh, I watch everything they give me. And he's like, oh, I have to confess that they gave me 9 episodes and I only watched 7, to which I said to him, wow. Why 7? Why did you even get to 7? That's crazy. It was a show he didn't even like. So, but yeah, I think the modern age TV critic, we just end up, if there are just so many things in front of us, we end up watching more episodes, and then we try to get the best bent on the show we can and come out swinging. So, for all intents and purposes, I've been watching way more hours than actual reviews. So. It feels a little fuzzy to me about how much I've been doing.
Yeah, well, in the old days, you probably got a screener with what? A few hours, but now there's more shows and you're getting more hours.
Yeah, sometimes you used to get one, and then sometimes you get, you know, 2. It was always rare. It was always like a delight when you got a good show, and it was 4, you know, from HBO. But those days are over. Now you get a lot. So be careful what you wish for,
yeah.
I guess.
Mm-hmm. So we should start with we talked about it last week, but your review went up and the premiere happened. Fear the Walking Dead, and you know what's worse than zombies? Water zombies.
I love the water zombies. I was I did have to. I will sort of this might be embarrassing because I'm sure someone else would have figured this out like immediately, or maybe I'm even wrong. But I saw it, and so now, and it's aired now, so I can't be too wrong. I remember thinking, "Huh, okay, so I guess they don't have to breathe because they're not breathing; they're dead. They're zombies. They don't actually breathe things, although they do kind of groan and make noises. So they're not really dead when they're in water, and they're kind of floating because they're not putting up a fight." And so, yeah, they're in the water, and that was weird for me. I had to press and say, is that possible? Is that physiologically possible? And then I was like, oh, it's a zombie show. Don't overthink it. Yeah. But yeah, it was interesting. It certainly for me, I think maybe I was one of like a handful of people who actually liked the show last year. it got a lot of bad reviews. And I want it to be better. And I think it can. And one of the reasons that it does work when it works is that it looks so different from the other ones. And I think, as I outlined in my review, you know, seeing a zombie kind of come out of the waves is pretty cool, right? That's pretty cool. And also floating in the water like Jaws is kind of a deal. But yeah, I the show has many, many other problems, which they have not been able to overcome yet. I think they've got potential. And I'll probably watch it just for entertainment purposes, but it hasn't turned the corner yet because they don't have that many really good characters. That's a problem.
Yeah, that's something that stuck out about the first, the original Walking Dead show, is that you could definitely grab onto a whole bunch of characters. And they had, in fact, so many that they could kill some of them and afford to do that because they had a lot of really interesting characters.
Yeah, and nobody popped. And so there are people popping on Fear the Walking Dead. They're just not the main characters. And in this season, as I pointed out, the two main characters are underwritten, standing around watching their teenage offspring do dumb stuff. And so that is a bad problem because I don't like teenagers doing dumb stuff on TV shows. And there's a lot of that on Fear the Walking Dead. So that is kind of a hard endorsement. And I'm wondering how many people, certainly among our listeners, would be actually out there giving this one either a second or a first try. I don't know.
How did Premiere, how'd the ratings do?
Well enough to be renewed for a third season.
Jeez. they didn't even wait.
You know, I think and the numbers were good last year. It doesn't have to be as big as the Mothership. But yeah, I just think that there is, you know, where you and I and maybe our savvy listeners would say, oh, I am this kind of fan of the show, of the main show, because it does these things, whereas I can't get on board of this. I think a lot of people who are just, quote, zombie fans, they just watch both. And so that's enough people, numbers-wise, to garner a return. Okay. So they're good. They'll be back for a third season.
Sure they will. What else is new? The Last Panthers. I didn't know we were running out of Panthers.
We are running out of Panthers. That is a show which is, okay, so this sort of justifies, there's been some discussion at work about, like, there's 1,500,000 shows. Should we review them all? And there's been that discussion. And I sometimes err on the no, let's not. And
let's
shocker. just because there's just... Yeah, and sometimes we get so far behind on them that when they come out, like, I'm a Orphan Black fan, and we'll talk about Orphan Black in a minute. It as we noted last week, it was going to premiere on Thursday, which is yesterday, rather than its normal Saturday. And I think that if I hadn't said, let's do Orphan Black, maybe they would have said, we can pass on that. But I like Orphan Black, so I kind of wanted to do it. But The Last Panthers is one of those shows where it's like, I'm glad we did it because I actually love that show. I recommend people watching it. It's on Sundance Channel. I hopefully people can get a on-demand viewing of it or go to the site. I'm sure because it only aired, I think, on Wednesday. I'm sure that it's still playing on Sundance right now, and it's really good. It's really smart. It's in three different languages.
Yeah, so it's from France, but it takes place kind of all over Europe.
It does. It's from France, and then it moves into Serbia, and then back into England. There's a little bit of a stop along the way in some other Balkan countries. But it's really good, and it's actually based on this group. I said The Last Panthers. There's a group called the Pink Panthers that is a crime group that was in the Balkans, and is notable for a number of high profile jewelry robberies all over the world, and they do things, and they have a certain code about how they work. They became kind of legendary as jewel thieves in the Balkans, and of course, you know, the Balkans had their own huge issues when war came out, et cetera, et cetera. But this story picks up, and part of it was the help of a French detective who's written about all these things, and at the same time was writing about how in Marseille, in France, the there's a gun problem. There's a, you know, Marseille is not a very, it's like a really run down ghetto-ish area. You would think that that's strange for France, but that is true there. And they have a gun problem. There's a lot of guns coming in and out of there. So the guns for the jewel heist originate there. And it's headed by a guy from Serbia who was raised amongst the Pink Panthers. And which is kind of funny for a name. We always think Pink Panthers is funny. And yeah. Inspector Clouseau. And in fact, you and I were just last week joking about Inspector Clouseau, which is kind of funny. Because I had no idea at the time that The Last Panthers was about, you know, they got it because...
Pink Panthers,
you know, they'd be called the Pink Panthers, but you know, they really are just the Panthers, but they get called the Pink Panthers because of all these jewel heists that were popular even in the movies. And it just, it goes on and it subverts the detective genre, Jason, at the point where in a really interesting way where they have Samantha Morton and John Hurt, who are two amazing British actors. And they're in this as, they're the investigators from a British insurance company. And you think, what? They're like, they're insurance adjusters or they want to get their jewels back. But it turns out that it's a very highly specialized branch and they're not really there. They don't really care who gets arrested. They just want the jewels back so that their company is not going to take the hit on all these diamonds that are super high-end insurance. And it exists today. It is a thing that exists in the world, or as you and I say, it's a thing. And so I kind of really was interesting about how that subverted the detective genre, because then another part of the show is the French cops who were trying to get, you know, there was a heist on their soil and then there was an accidental shooting, someone died. So they've got a lot of investigating to do, but there's bigger issues at hand. And so it's running across all these different borders. It's beautifully shot over six episodes. It's just the thing holds together like a 6-hour indie movie. So if anybody has a chance to go catch up on it, I say they should do it.
All right, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So that's Sundance, right? I'm not sure if we said that.
That's Sundance. Yeah, that's Sundance Channel. Sundance. And it's funny because I keep seeing Sundance Channel. I think Sundance wants to change their thing called to just Sundance. Anyway, so that's there. I'm just calling them Sundance, but yeah. And that was my one where I was like, okay, I probably could have easily maybe told them that we're not doing this, but yeah, it's really good. It's definitely something that our bunch of listeners will want to add to their pile of things, but it's not going anywhere as all TV. You can find it somewhere. You'll get to it at some point.
Sure.
And then Orphan Black, as we discussed, came out yesterday, and you're kind of sort of an Orphan Black fan. Is that right?
I am. Although we got bogged down in season 3 and haven't finished it.
To which I would say you are not alone. Huh. And I think I can give you some pretty good advice. I would say don't finish it. Because you and I talk a lot about time being the most precious commodity amongst people in the current modern TV age.
Sure.
And I agree that. And you don't have to finish the third season. And I have already got this question countless times already in the last 2 days via Twitter. And I've told people don't worry about it. Just they're like, I got confusing and I didn't like it. And they were taking these variations. I would just say stop.
Huh.
And start on season 4, which is a complete, basically, reboot.
Interesting.
Yes, and they do a great job of rebooting it in the first episode. So you'll be able – and BBC America is re-showing that episode. So yesterday's episode, Thursday, they will be showing that quite a bit. You can catch up before the next one. It's a really clever way they did it. And what else is really interesting about it is they basically, without saying, never mind – about last season, they basically say, we've
hit the reset button.
Mm-hmm. Instead of having all these different, and when we link to my review, it's in there how I explained all these like Caster, the male clones and these other conspiracy things. And said, no, they basically said, no, we have one enemy. Everybody else is out of the clone game. We're not even going to mention these other things. But we have one enemy. And it's the Neologians, which was when remember Matt Frewer,
right,
was the leader of that group. And
Dr. Leakey.
Dr. Leakey. They've moved it back, and the Neologians.
They're like a cult of of clone. They're like, yeah, it's weird, a weird like clone cult kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And they do a really good job of explaining it. So first timers can actually start there for sure. There's a really good how to start, but more importantly, because it's the fourth season, if you are an Orphan Black fan and a Tatiana Maslany fan, and you got bogged down in season three, give up. Start again on season four. Start fresh.
Sounds great. I'll do it.
Yeah, you should do it. I think you will like it too. I think you will be like, here's the show.
And your review says this. It bogged down in the third season where they added there were so many different players in this kind of conspiracy, and I think they made the mistake of thinking that the great joy in the show was the plot. Mm-hmm. And there was never the plot, right? It was always about the performances and the comedy and the relationships between some of the characters. And so you give Felix less screen time and give Donnie less screen time, and you have less opportunity to have fun with some of those characters. Yeah. It's that was the joy of that show. And then it became all about this kind of dark machinations of boy clones and girl clones and conspiracies, and it was a lot less fun.
And when you started out saying, oh, it's the Neologians, and they're like, oh, but it's actually an offshoot of them that are even worse. And then it was like, and then there's an offshoot of them that's like kind of a giant corporation that created us. What? It became crazy. You're right. It's like the X-Files. It's nice to have a backstory. But you are so right. I mean, this is really about the main players and what they were, and they've heard very strongly from their fans, obviously. But what they did, what they forgot was when they were adding all these people, and I kind of give them a little bit of credit for this, they were trying to keep the show fresh and not just have a clone all the time. But what they forgot was they had made so many great clones that for them it wasn't like they were expanding that much. It's just Tatiana doing the same, doing a different character. But for us, she so embodied a different character that all those people needed to be served, and wanted more time with.
I want more Allison, right?
Allison and Donnie. Yeah. And they didn't. They to their credit, they knew they had something with Donnie, and Allison. And then they tried to expand that storyline. But what they needed to do was expand all the clone storylines and not sort of bring in these boy clones and all these other things. And they've just fixed that.
That was the mistake. Talk about a huge gamble there. Are you going to find an actor who is going to be able to do the same thing as Tatiana Maslany on that show? And the answer is almost certainly not. And
right.
I don't have any problems with the actor who plays the male clones, but he's no Tatiana Maslany. He just isn't.
He's not. And they have not given out, they've rebooted and they're fully aware that they're basically going back to the beginning and they're starting fresh. And they've sort of dismissed all of that already. I'm hoping that, because they only got three episodes and I watched all three, but I'm hoping that they will not see fit to, go into depth about those boys.
All right. Well, I kept the season pass on, so we'll just dive back in. Maybe I'll just pretend that season three didn't happen. It'll be like season two of Friday Night Lights. Just let's not talk about it.
See, it's there's history. It's worked before.
Yeah. I don't know, the completist in me wants to power through season three, but we went off the rails with it. Like, we just couldn't. Sometimes you don't make that decision to stop watching a show. It just piles up on the DVR, and it's telling, right? It's telling
it's
that you,
telling.
You've chosen anything else but that.
Yeah, and you won't get any blame or finger pointing on my end. I know how hard it is, but it is, especially if it's a show that's like, I mean, you did like it, so it's, you're a sci-fi guy.
Yeah, yeah, no, I liked the first couple seasons, but season three just didn't float my boat. So maybe I'll just go back and skip on over.
Skip on, move onward.
Yeah. Okay, Tim, we need to take a break and tell people about our sponsor this week.
Woohoo!
Yes, it's nice we get a sponsor. It's Harry's.
Oh, well, I love Harry's.
You and I are both people who shave.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody shaves. Some people don't have hair growing up on their face, and other people like to be big, bushy, beardy people. But I don't think either of us are particularly.
No, we are not.
We're baby faced.
Mm-hmm. This is the baby face podcast. I like the smooth thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, you know, the razors in the drugstore are locked in that plexiglass case. I guess that's because they're so overpriced that people want to steal them. good razors cost too much. And so these two guys started Harrys.com. They sell high quality blades over the internet. They're great blades. I've been using them for more than a year now. You get a close, comfortable shave, and it's a lot cheaper than what you're going to get at the store. I like the blades. I've got a Harry's razor. I know you got one too from the nice people at Harry's.
I did, and I've been using it.
It makes my skin so smooth, and I like their shaving cream that they've got too. I got a little minty shaving lotion that I really like that comes from them too. Very high quality products at a really reasonable price. They liked, you know, that story. They liked it so much they bought the company. That's what the Victor Kiam actual razor product, right? That he was talking about.
That's true.
Well, these guys at Harry's liked the factory in Germany where their blades got made so much that they bought the factory. So they own the factory in Germany that churns out these blades, these high quality blades that are in all of the Harry's products. Close, comfortable shaves and a full refund if you're not happy. So factory direct prices, they cut out the middleman, it ships right to your door. You order it fast on the internet. It's super easy to do. Half the price of the leading brand. You don't have to get into that plexiglass case at the drugstore. Hey, anyone open the razor case for me? You can just go on harrys.com, check out in 30 seconds flat, and your razors will come straight to you. Here's a special deal. There's a starter set called the Truman. It's a great option for new Harry's customers. Mm-hmm. Amazing deal. $15. This is what we got. $15. You get a razor handle. You get some shave cream. And you get 3 5-blade razors.
Yep.
All from Harry's. And we'll give you $5 off your first purchase when you go to harrys.com/TV Talk. That's it. harrys.com/TV Talk. $5 off your first purchase at Harry's. Thank you to Harry's for sponsoring the TV Talk machine.
It's a great shave.
Okay, so Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is back on Netflix as of today, as we're recording this. The second season dropped. So
yes, they also had the worldwide release of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and I did get my review up. It's up. It's up today. It's very funny. It's always funny. It's it's basically more of what you got last year is what you'll get this year. There's the jokes are funny. They're fast and they're furious like a shotgun. There's some very funny visual jokes, which is one of my favorite things. There's a visual joke so funny in this show, I just guffawed. And, like, out loud. But it's, it's one of those things. I don't know I know you watched it last year, right? Did you watch it?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what you did, but I didn't binge it. So did you binge it?
Slow binge, man. Slow binge.
Okay.
We did watch like 2 or 3 at a time. Sometimes we went through it fast. Yeah.
Right. Modified binge.
Yes. The slow binge.
Yeah. Slow binge. I didn't. And what I did was I think I watched for review purposes, I probably watched the first couple or 3 or 4 maybe. But after that, I definitely kind of – it was like it was a little box of chocolates thing for me. I was just coming back to – get an episode and get a laugh because of Tina Fey, such a great writer, between bits of other shows. And that's my review today is basically endorsing that while simultaneously saying, hey, you watch a couple less episodes of The Last Panthers and it's really complicated and it's really complicated and maybe you'll need a break and you'll come back and you'll watch, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I'm not sure there's much more to say there. There is an arc to it, and I don't think that that's super important. I never really cared where the arc was going. I just wanted to find those characters and have them make me laugh, and that's pretty much where we are in season 2.
Great. I'm looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, just get into that.
Yeah. Those are your four reviewed shows. Is there something coming up, anything coming up in the next week that we should be watching out for?
Yeah, I mean, I've already started, though. I've actually done the review already, but it's not in print until won't be in print until next week. But yeah, we have we'll have another one before then. But we know that Silicon Valley and Veep are coming, so those are the big comedies that are on their way. But hopefully, there's a little bit of a break. I did have a, I guess you might even call this a slightly Columbo moment. I did have a legit question when I saw someone tweet this out. I wanted to know, did you stay with the Magicians?
About, we're slowly going through it. So it's that it's not quite at the we've stalled it. It's more like some stuff came on top of it. So we've got like four left, I think.
I heard it's pretty good.
We're about halfway through it. I'm really liking it. Yeah. It's just, you know, then suddenly it's sort of like, hey, Daredevil came out. Do you want to, you know, then they're like, hey, let's do a podcast about it. I'm like, okay, I guess I need to watch 13 hours of Daredevil. And that's that there's so much, you know, too much TV, I think, is what I'm saying here. So, but yeah, I'm really liking it.
Good, because that's, you know, for me, I've often used you as the, like, the, especially for a lot of the, for a lot of shows that are in genre shows like that, where I'm like, oh, okay, well, if he's stuck with it, I'm going to go back and finish it. And that one for sure is on my list. I even wrote it down. I was like, oh, okay, let's revisit The Magicians, because I reviewed it and really liked it. And then I, God knows, we've talked about not getting to the endings many times, but now I see that popping up a lot. Like some shows come get good reviews, but I never see them even following other critics. I never see like somebody talking about Younger very often or whatever popping up on my feed, but Magicians pops up quite a bit. So must be something there.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
All right.
So I have a note here to just basically say WTF Sleepy Hollow. Now, you and I talked famously, I think, toward the beginning of season two of Sleepy Hollow, about how completely they had blown it with their introduction of characters such as Surfer Boy, the fact that they took the I was trying to explain this to somebody. I said, imagine if in season two of The X-Files, they introduced a new character. They split up Mulder and Scully and introduced a whole bunch of new characters to have the actors interact with instead of working with each other. And then now we know, and this is a spoiler for Sleepy Hollow, but seriously, don't watch Sleepy Hollow. Seriously. Yeah. And now imagine at the end of season three, they killed Scully. What are they? What? I don't have a lot to say here. There's so much about you know, killing off one of the main characters, you know, rumblings that she wanted to leave the show. But if she wanted to leave the show, it's because they completely did her no favors, her character and the creative output of the show in general. This is one of the most impressive cases of television malpractice I have seen in a long time, where they took a pretty good show with a pretty surprising first season and drove it into the ground almost instantaneously and then kept beating it into the ground until there's nothing left. And, you know, I hope it doesn't come back for a fourth season, because how bad would that be?
Yeah, I think this is one of those things where you and I can look back and say, wow, we totally nailed that. I mean, like, we were all over that right when it was happening. And there wasn't at the time like a – it was still kind of in the – it was a hit, but it was also kind of a cultish thing. And you know, the first season had become this kind of like, wow, this is really interesting. They're adding new – and this is going to be – you know, going forward, it's wild. It's this crazy mishmash of things. And then we were like, well, what is happening here? And we were right. It just – you know, as you said, I think this is going to go as a case study for how to blow up your own show. Yeah. So, and I have no, you know, she's gone. You know, I have no like, and you never know what to trust when you hear things come out of it. I think,
Did she jump? Was she pushed?
Well, I think what I hear, and I think probably what you sussed out very accurately. Yeah. She didn't want to be in the show anymore because she wasn't on the show anymore. They had basically separated her.
Yeah.
And then simultaneously, on the other hand, he was just kind of bored with what he was doing and wanted to be on set less and do other projects. And it's just a whole thing. Had they left at this, you know, Abby and Ichabod, they would have had a show, and they didn't, and they blew it up. So I have no, you know, I got no worries about them.
Short of discovering years down the line that the two actors hated each other and they had to be separated. And they tried to make the best of a bad situation where these actors, you know, like a real Good Wife kind of situation,
exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Short of that, I just don't understand why they made the decisions they made. And just adding, you know, bringing in you know, putting Orlando Bloom in the mental institution and bringing in his wife and separating them and bringing in, you know, famously bringing in Surfer Boy and all that. It was just, you know, I just find it funny. The reason I bring it up now is that we were kind of baffled back then, and it just continued to go in that direction. Like, it's kind of amazing that they had this really great thing and they completely destroyed it.
Yeah, completely, to the point where when you're killing off characters, they killed Scully.
That's
too funny. Yeah, just, I have no sympathy for them. And it is kind of a there's so many of these, but it's definitely a show where you could just say, okay, here's where all the steps you went wrong. But really, the gist of it, Jason, is what we pointed out as season two was underway. They didn't know what the show they had. They thought they had some other show, and they didn't. That was not never the show.
Yeah.
And I think it's surprising when that comes to a revelation to people who either created the show or put in as showrunners, when they learn the hard way that they think they're making show A, but the fans are watching it for show B. So yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, that I feel like so much of it. Of the failure we see. It's a little failure analysis, right?
Sure.
And I brought this up when I was talking about, like, why Star Wars and Star Trek both kind of had some rough patches when they relied on their creators sort of to come up with the next thing for them is, you know, and Chris Carter we talked about with the X-Files. It's like, I think that there's a big truth in the fact that a lot of times creators don't understand what actually is the driver of their success. And if you don't know why you're succeeding, or you would like to believe it's something that it's not, you can make a really bad mistake. And, you know, I think that must be what happened here, because they I don't know what they thought the appeal of the show was. It kind of baffles me now because it seems pretty clear, but I guess not. I mean, you could even argue with Orphan Black the same thing, right? In season three, that they thought these big conspiracies were the thing people were tuning in for, and it was so not what it was.
And yeah, I think the difference there, I would argue, is that they didn't know what they had in Sleepy Hollow. I don't think I think what you're saying is I don't think they knew what they had there, and it was a surprise to them, like, oh, that's not where you're watching. Whereas I think in Orphan Black, I think it was sort of the best intentions, which was, hey, we're pivoting into this third season, and that is historically where shows take chances, and they broaden themselves. I think some creators worry, like, oh well, Are we going to be the same show in season three that we were in season one?
Is this all the show is, or can we take it to some other level? And I will admit, season three of Orphan Black definitely felt like they were cranking it up a notch. Like, we're going to get even more stuff. And then the problem was there was sort of too much stuff at that point. So
right, and you're totally right. And I actually, it's a completely different genre show. But I said that if you remember back, people who were Sons of Anarchy fans, they didn't like season three when they went to Ireland, and I wanted to give Kurt Sutter the benefit of the doubt, because when you're a creator, season three is when you really you're just paranoid that you're going to make the same show over and over again, and people will be bored. You don't want to bore them. But I think there's something to ambition, like you just said. Let's make it. We're ratcheting it up a notch, and then there's finding out that we really didn't want you to be that ambitious. You know, maybe a better storyline here and there, sure. Maybe a little twist here and there, but let's focus on our core group, and that's the lesson Orphan Black learned, and they're the better for it for season four. Because I'm a fan of the show. And season three was a mess, but I was still there. I watched all the way through, but I can tell you, man, season four, they got it, and they redid it, and it's creepy and fun, and we're back to our main characters.
I'll also point out, and there's actually a piece that I'll link to in that's from the Hollywood Reporter of all places.
I've heard of that place
By your colleague Dan, which is basically. Hey, why did so many women on TV get killed?
Oh, excellent.
Last week,
yeah, definitely. Good piece from Dan,
and it's for different reasons. But you know, it was very. I'm glad he wrote about it, because I had that same thought. It's like, why is this happening? And like, why is it also happening in the next, in the last couple of weeks?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, there was a death on Arrow that I thought was, kind of peculiar. Although that's a show that's got too many characters. Right. And then, you know, the Americans, which we mentioned last week, and Sleepy Hollow, and, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, it was good timing. It was well done, and I was very happy to see it. He's on top of a lot of shows, and it like all kind of happened, and he was like, I got this, and it's very smart.
I'm waiting for the week where six white guys die. waiting for that.
Let's look for that.
That may be a while, but
let's set our timer. Yeah.
All right. So let's. You want to do some? You want to do some letters, or you're going to Columbo me again?
No, I won't come to you, but I guess this might be it. It's kind of Columbo. I think we're both kind of paranoid in our own way about the Columbo part.
I'll just start. Let's get to the letters. Tim, you have anything else? I can just get to the letters now.
Well, I do want to say, because I know, right? It's crazy. I am watching Vinyl, and I'm going to do a big piece on Vinyl, and it's going to come out on Sunday, so people can look for it. But I had a moment that it means nothing, but I was watching it so late at night that I had to stop because I thought, because I have insomnia, hence the nap prior to this. But I was like, did I just dream that dialogue? I had to rewind it. And in Vinyl, 1972 New York setting, a bank manager, which this makes no sense. This is why I had to rewind it. Bank manager says, they're talking about where he went to school. And he says, oh yeah, I went to CCA. And I thought, I think he just said CCA, like, and he said California College of the Arts out in Oakland.
Huh.
And you can imagine that I thought maybe I was dreaming it. And I rewound it. And no, there's a California College of the Arts where I teach. There's a reference to it. And there's a reference of Oakland in Vinyl, of all places.
Shameless pandering to you.
And there you go. And I have no more Columbo moments. Okay. That's it.
Okay. All right. Well then, let's move on to some notes. We've got Dean in the 707.
Okay.
Got your Dean update.
All right.
Okay. There's a couple things going on with Dean. Okay. First up, Dean is now in the 615 watching Nashville. That's Tennessee.
Are we sure?
Well, he says I'm pretty sure, but you might want to check that because he says you still haven't learned your lesson not to trust the letters. I screwed up and put South Carolina last week when it was North Carolina. And then he sent a picture of the Andy Griffith statue from Mount Airy, which is the Mayberry, basically, North Carolina, as penance for his South Carolina, North Carolina mistake. But that led to this letter from Bill in the 610. Oh, Jason, is this to become the new normal? You get bad information and you blithely pass it on like some kind of bad information passer on or guy. As everyone knows, everyone who's lived my life anyway, the Andy Griffith show is in North Carolina, not South Carolina. It might interest your listeners to know these are two different states and are not actually interchangeable. Do you hear that, Dean? The town of Mayberry was based on Mount Airy, North Carolina, where Griffith was born and raised. The nearby town of Pilot Mountain was the basis for Mayberry's neighbor, the cleverly disguised Mount Pilot. If your roving correspondent, sorry, I forget his name, I'm old, that's Dean, is counting on the Andy Griffith show to fulfill the South Carolina leg of his quest, I'm afraid that, like Job Bluth, he has made a huge mistake. Fun fact, my dad went to college with Andy Griffith at the University of North Carolina, from which they both graduated in 1949. Thank you, Bill in the 610. I just pointed out to Bill in the 610 that I couldn't believe a word he said, and he sent me a link to Wikipedia, which proved that, in fact, it's all North Carolina and not South Carolina. And at this point, I trust no facts that any listener will give to us. Never. Nope. I don't believe any of you.
This has me weeping for so many levels because, first of all, you just got a pretty hilariously funny dressing down.
2 weeks in a row.
It's really not
your fault. I passed
all
lies from listeners.
It's really not your fault. Your job, the show, people, doesn't actually have a researcher.
I don't fact check the letters. Well, obviously, we've learned that, haven't we, that I don't fact check the letters.
It makes me that you are taking the fall for it. Mm-hmm. It makes me, of course, I'm giddy at that.
Yeah.
And that it's 2 weeks in a row and that we don't really have a fact checker, a paid fact checker. We have no one who's paid on this show.
No.
And then that part's funny. And then, Jason, how far we've come where we're on a podcast where we're being taken to task for not just not having information, but having misinformation.
I know, because the old TV talk machine, you see, that was how it got by, is there was just no information.
Right. And if there was information, we pretty much said it was probably misinformation.
Yeah. Yeah, or your classic response to questions, which is, it wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Which is, I don't actually know for a fact, but, you know, it could. It could be the case.
We might have to bring that part back when you read letters, and you're going to – it'll say, I watched that. And you know what? You should just say, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if that was in South Carolina.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. It comes around.
Well, let's we do have some people get paid for this podcast when we have a sponsor like Harry's, you know, then we get some money.
Yes, that's true.
That's right.
That's true. I meant we don't have like a research team.
That's true. The staff, we don't have an intern.
We do have supporters. We do have ads, and those are always nice to
have. That's true. But we're just pocketing that cold hard podcast money and not pushing it toward fact checking.
Research.
Nope. Yeah. Proudly not being researched. We are incorrect worldwide simultaneously, though, so that's good. All right, here's Hobo Eric.
He's back.
Calling from the Pulse 27. He's back. Oh.
Did you set this up knowing that I would be like having a small giggle fest, and then the next one would be Hobo Eric?
This is just how it works.
Okay, good.
Two items I wanted to bring up this week. One, The Night Manager starts on AMC next week, and I've just finished the episodes on the BBC. The series is wonderful, delicious, opulent, and brutal. It's the polar opposite of London Spy. Actual spy stuff happens. If you've only watched the screener episodes, watch it all the way through to the end. Hugh Laurie is a great villain and will make you forget House ever happened.
Mm.
So that's one, Night Manager.
Yes, that I would just interject that Night Manager is something that I will definitely be watching, and I'm sure Dan will definitely be watching it, but neither of us will be reviewing it. It was reviewed out of a film festival. So that's done.
Two, I've taken up a challenge from a movie podcast to watch 366 movies this year. It's been a great way to pare back my TV watching and shuffle off the B and C list shows. Gone are The Big Bang Theory, Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder, iZombie, The Blacklist, Homeland. The list goes on. It also allowed me to get rid of new shows and seasons pretty quick. It took me 10 minutes to leave Flaked on the floor, and even less time for the social media stars of Amazing Race. This may be an extreme way to focus on the best, but it's worked for me. If you had to remove 2 or 3 hours of TV watching a day, what would you lose?
My job?
Yeah, see, there's a good answer. Good answer.
You go first.
I'd say the stuff that's stacked on my TiVo. Like, I would lose, I would probably lose, I mean, I would definitely lose Legends of Tomorrow. I would probably lose Arrow, but I would keep The Flash. I would lose Big Bang Theory, which I still watch occasionally, but it's just, it's inertia, and it should, I'm considering canceling it at the end of the season, actually, for my personal TiVo cancellation queue. I don't know. I might lose... There's probably some streaming stuff that I'm stalled on that I would probably not get back to.
Interesting.
Just kind of let it go. But I don't watch 2 or 3 hours of TV a day. That's the thing. That's why I'm so behind, is I've got a good... you know, on a good day, watch a couple of hour shows. And sometimes it's like 1 hour show and a half hour. And that's about it. So I don't have that much. But yeah, I know the stuff that I would, and it's the stuff, like I said, that's stacked up. If I got 6 or 7 episodes of it on the DVR, I would just declare bankruptcy and move on.
Yeah, that's usually what I do. Even though I, and usually then I'm public that I've dropped the show. Obviously, I'm different because I'm paid to do this.
Yeah.
But and you could obviously drop the remaining Orphan Black Season 3 mysteries. You can drop those off. That's always time saved. For me, I think the ones that would go are ones that I find enjoyable.
So you just lose more joy in your life. You lose your optional stuff, right? Yeah. You lose The Blacklist because...
Yeah, I would. And Elementary. Those are the two that came to me as like probably not going to happen. Neither would like, you know, all the John Olivers and things that I have... stored up, and Colbert's up, and you know, Kimmel's. I probably would never get to those because I only get to them when I can anyway.
Yeah, all that stuff would have to go.
They would go, and you know, even almost like a I hate to say it, but like, you know, like we talked about plowing through all six episodes of Catastrophe, which was great. And I would do that, but I wouldn't do that with Kimmy Schmidt. Like, I feel like I'm going to take this show basically, like I said, as a little, you know, amuse-bouche when I have to clear my palate of something else. And, shows like that, I probably, you know, and I have to say, like, I want to catch up with Magicians, but if I had this, you know, this fake rule that I've got to watch more movies.
It's the Hobo Eric rule.
It's the Hobo Eric rule. Then it's actually good. I think that's actually, I think Eric taking that idea up is actually really good, because I endorse pretty much all the shows he's dropped. So I think those are droppable. Hmm. And if he's replacing those with a, like, really good movies, that his cultural life will be greatly enriched.
I bet he's not replacing them with good movies. I bet not, but still.
That could be. Oh, my goodness. But yeah, it's my joy is not even sometimes just dropping things as it is, going back and finishing things. That's my new, I think I might write something about that. That's my new, like, I'm like, oh, I get to finish the last three episodes of this show that I really love. But I just, because so many things start and you end up, you know, having to go back and finish it. And I always, I don't know why it makes me laugh. It's kind of a perverse joy. And like, I get to actually finish a show that I'm on record as really loving, but everybody else has finished it, but not me. So it's funny. It's weird that way.
I read a book, and I can't remember. It was one of the people from Mystery Science Theater 3000 wrote a book where he watched a movie every day in a theater every day.
Wow.
I think it was in a theater if he could reasonably get to a theater, and he ended up like on a South Pacific island at a movie theater. Here it is. It was called A Year at the Movies: One Man's Film Going Odyssey, and it's Kevin Murphy, who was Tom Servo.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he brought an entire Thanksgiving dinner into the movie theater on Thanksgiving Day.
That's awesome.
So anyway, good luck, Hobo Eric.
Bring your dinner.
Glad you find some time for podcasting throughout all.
I know.
All
we're kind of lucky watching. There. That's easy to say. Yeah, send a letter. Yeah, I found another hour that I could cut.
Mm. Yeah.
Now so, he loves us. Big hugs.
So we got a couple couple more here.
Okay.
This is Scott in the 202.
Oh, yeah. DC, right?
Yeah, I think so. I heard your podcast where you answer the question about shows with great casts. Mm-hmm. It led me to a maybe more interesting question. What shows can you mention where the cast and creative team was great, but for whatever other reason, the show didn't work?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he says, I'll throw one in to get the ball rolling. There was a one season sitcom called The Powers That Be on NBC in 1992. Had Holland Taylor, David Hyde Pierce, Peter McNichol, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, John Forsythe, created by David Crane and Marta Kaufman, who went on to create Friends. One of the writers was Graham Yost.
That's a good one.
I remember watching and liking it. It was no smash hit. It barely lasted the season. Quite a pedigree, you know. So what do you guys think? And then he also says, I've only been listening to the podcast for 4 or 5 months now, but it's rapidly become one of my most anticipated each week. And this is, he's describing it well. Jason's love of all things nerdy fits perfectly with Tim's expertise on all things television.
So, yay. And there is a summation of kind of why we got together.
That's right. He says, I followed Jason for years without knowing it on the old TV website and in Macworld. And the first time I visited San Francisco, I went out of my way to get a Chronicle so I could read Tim's column in newsprint. Keep up the great work, guys. Scott in the 202. So do you have any sort of like, I would almost recast this as shows that were sort of surprising in their failure.
Yeah.
Because they
have
talented people.
Yeah. I think that it's funny that there's, it's almost like you say these shows didn't. They're star vehicles. They're made for stars, and they end up not. They end up not lasting, and so it's hard to remember them because they were such great casts. Like, so he did a good job of remembering that. And I'm trying to remember. There was a show called The Center. I don't even know if it's even going to be around anymore, but. It was so old that like I was just Googling it and it's coming up with stuff that wasn't even on there. But it was a spectacular failure. It was Olympia Dukakis, John Goodman. It was one of those things where they had a multi-generation family, and every group was famous actors. So the grandparents were famous actors, the parents were famous actors, their friends were famous actors, their kids were famous actors. It was like this, wow, this thing can't fail.
Oh, Center of the Universe.
Center of the Universe. Center of the Universe.
John Goodman, Gene Smart, Olympia Dukakis, Ed Asner.
Mm-hmm. And it had just a lot of good people around it. And I think that was NBC. They thought that was going to be huge, huge hit. And I remember watching it thinking, well, this is really bad. And it didn't work.
CBS. Sorry, CBS.
Oh, CBS. See, the memory goes.
I had two thoughts here. One was Studio 60. Which is not to beat up on Studio 60, but coming off of
there's your whipping boy.
I took it in the chin from on Facebook for us not liking the Newsroom, and we were accused of being condescending. And it's like, no, we just don't like the show you like. That's all, dude. That's all it is. It's like people can like what they like, but I don't like that show. But Studio 60, way worse than the Newsroom, I would argue. And so coming off of the West Wing, and with a pretty great cast, and it's terrible. Mm. And then the other one, you know what popped to mind? Was there was an NBC show called Stark Raving Mad that Neil Patrick Harris and Tony Shalhoub. And Tony Shalhoub. What a great idea. And it was a complete flop.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, nice cast. Didn't do anything with it.
Yeah. And I think history is beginning to muddle our sense.
And that was Stephen Levitan, right? I mean, he's had a lot of TV success, but that was took a dive.
Yeah, and I think that it's weird because, like, now I almost think that when shows don't work, it's less surprising because the competitive landscape is so fierce. And so you almost look back and think, how could you not succeed with a big cast and a proven showrunner and writer? In those days when everything was a hit, but you know what? It really wasn't because the demands were different. There were fewer shows, but yeah, maybe that show got 7 million or something on its first. That's the funny part. It could have got 7 million on its first episode and we'd be thinking, oh my God, enormous hit. But back then they were like, okay, can we kill it while it's actually airing?
Yeah. Just pull the plug, put up some live footage of a hurricane somewhere.
Yes, exactly.
All right, two more letters. This was from Sam in the 707. Mm-hmm. Says, I have a TV programming idea.
Okay.
Like most people, I hate the mid-season finale, waiting 2 months to pick up a series in the middle of a season. While I watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter, both have plenty of filler episodes. Could you imagine a Marvel variety hour where it swaps between shows from week to week, 2 weeks of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., an episode of Agent Carter that ties into what's going on in the future, then back to S.H.I.E.L.D., then a week off if there's nothing going on? A week off that has nothing to do with what's going on, like a Marvel What If episode, or perhaps just an hour dedicated to some side story. I feel like the serialized nature of shows forces people to watch from the beginning. Perhaps this would be a way of allowing people to watch single episodes without having to follow every Marvel property to really enjoy what's going on. I read this letter because David Lore is a big fan of the anthology series concept, mm-hmm. and this sounds a little bit like that. I'm not sure you'd want to take a show, like literally have it be two episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and an episode of Agent Carter, and I don't think that's practical, but I like the idea of what if you had a little more variety. And I brought this up because there was some news this week about what is going on with the CBS All Access new Star Trek series that Brian Fuller is putting together. Mm-hmm. And they reported that it's going to be probably, the rumor is anyway, a direct sequel to Star Trek VI, which is going to put it in that particular corner of the Star Trek universe after the original series movies, but before the Next Generation. It's a kind of an empty time period that they could fill with stuff. But the second rumor was that the intent is for that to be a story for that season, and that if they come back for a second season, they'll tell another story in some other portion of the universe. And I thought, that's how you do anthology today.
Yeah.
Like True Detective or Fargo, you do a season, you tell a story, and then you move on and tell a different story, but mm-hmm. not like interspersing different stories like you're reading five novels at once.
Right. I mean, I think that's, you're right, that's how it's going to work, whether it's American Horror Story or
that's another good example.
American Crime Story. We'll see what happens after OJ. It was a huge, huge
So you're building a franchise around kind of about around something, around a concept or a showrunner or some kind of voice. And so you can build a brand around it without it being a continuing story. And in the case of American Horror Story, right, they even have recurring players playing different parts.
Yeah, that was the amazing thing about it. Yeah. And that's what they loved as actors. And why wouldn't they? Right.
Right.
That's,
it's like a new like you're in a play and then you're in another play and it's different. And you're a different character.
Yeah, I think the problem with the idea at hand is that it would frustrate people. It would less than keeping them around. It's like, yeah, I just saw two Agent Carters and I'm super excited, but I don't know when the third will come around. It's like starting a book and then someone snatching it out of your hand.
Right.
And then 6 weeks later, they put it back in your hand, and you're like, eh.
You want to have some momentum. I feel like you got to have that narrative momentum.
Exactly. So I don't think that would work. But the idea of making things different, some variation of this idea, I think, would work some way, even different than what we're saying with Fargo. I love the Fargo and the True Detective idea. But I think this question, there probably is a workable concept in there somewhere.
Interesting. Well, get working on it, Sam. And let us know. Sam,
let us know. He'll be a billionaire.
He will. Okay, one more letter. Here it is.
Okay.
This is from the 3531. After a trip, that's Ireland, I believe. After a trip away,
really?
Listening to Terry Gross and intelligent BBC podcasts, I decided I had learned far too many big words and wanted to binge on the greatest podcast ever. So in a week or so, I listened to around 50 episodes as I like to live dangerously. It also makes an interesting listen while I'm in the gym. I do have a TV question, though, and it's this. The only way for network TV to compete is to relax FCC regulations. Discuss. That's not a question. P.S. When will The Riches be appearing on Netflix? Love to your mothers from the 3531, Andrew. OG TVTM letter writer, Andrew.
I got to say, Andrew, I hope Andrew will appreciate this. We did not prepare this. Jason didn't know this was coming. As you're reading this letter, I said, that's Andrew.
Yep.
I said, this is going to end with love to your mothers.
Mm-hmm. This was a test and you passed it.
It was exactly
flying colors.
That was when you said Ireland, I thought, oh great, I'm glad somebody in Ireland is watching. And then it was like after going listening to smarter podcasts.
Yeah.
Well, Andrew knows we've upped our game considerably on the smart factor. he's right. Well, love to your mothers. I'm so happy he's back. He's an OG. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a multifaceted answer to that is how is network going to survive? It's I love writing about the industry and failure analysis. And I have to say that every time I sit down to look at this, I'm like, well, where do you start with this puzzle? Because they need to fix a lot of things. And the institutional part of it is, I think, boring to some people unless I can find a way to sex it up. But, you know, we on this very podcast, we've talked about the math of the episodes and repeats and all those things. And then when you get into, you know, you're actually making cable show ratings out of network style budgets, there's a bigger problem there. But yeah, I think you're onto something there, Andrew. But here's a problem I would just throw out as a modern show. The one show that pushed the boundaries that in this current season that came out to be basically like a cable show without the sex, really, with the nudity at least, was American Crime. And it got tons of critical acclaim, but not a whole big audience. So I don't know. I don't know if that's going to save it at all because – a part of me is like, cable is so specific in what they can do. Yes, for nudity, you could go back and say, you know, the girlfriend experience, you can't even make that show unless you have the nudity and the sex and whatnot. But do people really want to go from one kind of gritty, tough, grown-up show to the other? I don't know if they do because I think sometimes they want, you know, Big Bang Theory and they want Kimmy Schmidt to, like, lighten up their lives. So I don't know. It's been tried and it hasn't worked.
Yeah. Well, love to your mothers, Andrew. Thanks for writing in. And
love you.
We've reached the end.
We have.
I think we did it.
and I'm not going to Columbo you. I'm just going to put that out there. Okay. It's not happening.
Then I'm going to give the numbers. You can reach us. You can many ways to reach us on Twitter. Let's start there. TVTM on Twitter. We look at those. So if you want to just tweet at us, do it. TVTM. I'm Jay Snell on Twitter. Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. You can include us too if you like. Email. A classic way of reaching people on the internet, podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. And of course, there's the Facebook page, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine will get you to where Andrew sent love to our mothers. Mm-hmm. So many different ways to reach us. And we'll be back next week with another episode of the TV Talk Machine. Tim, it's been a pleasure.
As always.
See you next week, everybody.